I'm in Page today, and is it ever hot down here? Clear blue skies, and the weather's probably going up to 40 during the day. Last night we had a very nice program at the temple. There were about 20 invitees. These are the same type of programs that we're doing in Budapest, inviting people who've never been to a Hare Krishna temple before, but who've met devotees on the street, have a relationship with sectan devotees by seeing them regularly, or they know someone who is involved in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, it's a paying dinner. They come. We had a wonderful dinner out on the lawn of the temple, which overlooks the city. And after the dinner, then we had a video, Srila Prabhupada giving a short lecture. I spoke briefly about Srila Prabhupada, chanted Hare Krishna, and then questions and answers. And usually it's really tough to shake off the guests when it comes to question and answers. I like to stay around for a long time. So it was really a nice program. I've been doing it for a few years in Budapest with, I think, good results. We've gotten fully committed, fully practicing devotees from it, and these are professional people, and also some very large-scale donors, and particularly serving the prasadam first is a real icebreaker, and the program is just particularly tailored for newcomers with the idea of trying to increase their interest so that they become more regular patrons of Krishna consciousness. Anyhow, this morning, interesting here, devotees are reading for Lord Kapila Dev's instructions on devotional service. And I thought it was interesting to speak about today's verse because it touches on the topic of Yoga Nishra Bhakti. Lord Kapila Dev is saying, and the Sanskrit is, Yadamana Svam Birayam Yogena Sushamahitam Kashtam Bhagavato Dhyayat Svana Sagravalokanaha. When the mind is perfectly purified by the practice, this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in his brief purport, Srila Prabhupada said, it is clearly mentioned here that one has to meditate on the expansion of Vishnu. The word kastam refers to Paramatma, the expansion of the expansion of Vishnu. Bhagavata refers to Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Godhead is Krishna, from him comes the first expansion Baladeva, from Baladeva comes Shankarshan, Aniruddha, and many other forms, followed by the Purusha avatars. As mentioned in the previous verses, Purusar Chalam, this Purusha is represented as the Paramatma, or Supersoul. A description of the Supersoul upon whom one must meditate will be given in the following verses. In this verse, it is clearly stated that one must meditate by fixing the vision on the tip of the nose and concentrating one's mind on the Kala, or the plenary expansion of Vishnu. Last night I was speaking with some guests who are yoga practitioners, and I pointed out to them that the process of meditation, which entails focusing the mind on an object, is a means. It's not in itself an end. Meditation requires that after one has achieved a certain purity of the heart, one is able to actually focus the mind. So sometimes such exercises are given as here, focusing your eyes, staring at the tip of your nose, or one closes one's eyes and looks at a point, or stare at a candle or a light. But self-realization doesn't come either from looking at your nose or looking at a light or a candle. That is a discipline to keep oneself from being distracted. But the real purpose, which is being described here, is that once one does that, once the senses are then focused, one needs to picture within one's mind the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that ultimately the goal of yoga is kastam bhagavata dhyayat, to be able to meditate upon Krishna. And because it's Krishna, either his form or as we do it by chanting Hare Krishna, that actually purifies the heart and brings one to the state of liberation. One doesn't become purified by meditating upon a candle. That does not liberate one. And of course our meditation and chanting Hare Krishna is very wonderful, because there the means is simply one, as well as, and it's also the end, which is concentrating on the holy name of the Lord. The holy name is the object upon which one is meant to concentrate on by hearing, and it's also the purifying agent which purifies the heart and ultimately reveals itself as Krishna. This practice of meditation, as long as the asanas and the breathing practices that come along with it, are sometimes recommended in Shastra. It is called Yoga Mishra Bhakti. And the whole idea is that for people who have a strong attachment to this kind of yogic practice, that they're encouraged to do these practices, but with a very focused type of meditation, and that meditation is meditation on the form of the Lord. And ultimately, although their attachment begins by performing asanas and perhaps acquiring some certain siddhi, by regular concentration on the form of the Lord, their hearts become purified and they become detached from the asana and they become attached to Krishna, and ultimately that way they become bhaktas. And the same thing goes for jnana mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti, people who are attached to work, either fruitive work or just detached work, those people who are attached to mental speculation and the analytical study of the world, rather than just practicing karma or jnana, they're connected yoga with the process of bhakti, so that the purifying contact with devotional service frees them from the lower attachment and brings them to Krishna's lotus feet in time. This may be something that we encourage people to do. In fact, it's become something that's quite popular nowadays in ISKCON centers, where we teach yoga, or rather attract people from the outside under the guise of yoga practice. But ultimately the idea is that simultaneously with that they should hear the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, meditate upon mantras which contain Krishna's holy name, ultimately chant Hare Krishna, and come to the path of devotional service. Is it something that should be done? It's worth a try. Palena Parichayate. Let's see what the result is. If by the result one actually does make devotees, then by all means let it continue. I know that here in Hungary, we at both our college and in downtown Budapest, we have these yoga practices. We followed on from His Holiness Devamrita Maharaj, who with his Loft Centers is very successful in making devotees, and we've also found it to be a successful way of bringing people to Krishna consciousness and bringing them actually to devotional service. Just on Saturday I was speaking with a couple. The man is a professional man, a lawyer. And they're at the stage of chanting 16 rounds, they're raising their children as devotees, they're asking to make plans for initiation, regularly studying Srila Prabhupada's books. In other words, they're very serious people, and he came by being attracted to yoga. He came in the very beginning to the college attracted and interested in practicing yoga asanas. But by hearing the philosophy, seeing the devotees, becoming interested in the devotees and the programs that were going on then. And then he also connected into the preaching program, which I mentioned earlier. He's no longer practicing yoga, he's practicing bhakti. So, palina parichyati, if it works, it's fine. Should devotees practice yoga? Not to enhance their devotional service, because they may get distracted from it, and devotional service doesn't need to be enhanced by yoga anymore. Aradito yadi hari tapasastatakim, naradito yadi hari tapasastatakim. If the goal of yoga is to achieve bhakti, and you've already achieved bhakti, then what is the need of practicing yoga? And if the goal of yoga is to achieve bhakti, and by the practice of bhakti you haven't achieved, by the practice of yoga, excuse me, you haven't achieved bhakti, then your yoga is useless. So no, devotees do not need to practice asanas once they've come to bhakti or devotional service. But having said that, I've been recently toying with the idea of almost making some yoga practices compulsory for devotees. Not to enhance their devotional service, but because I see that devotees very often neglect their own health, particularly sankirtan devotees who are on the street carrying books all day long, and even other devotees. And I don't believe that being unhealthy is an option. In other words, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we should not allow devotees to neglect their physical well-being in the name of devotional service, because it's this body with which we are able to do service, and we want to be able to do that until our old age. So proactive care of the body within reasonable limits is important, and sometimes, in fact, most often than not, devotees neglect taking care of their body. So I'm thinking that even 20 minutes before deity greeting, having actually compulsory yoga asanas for devotees so that they stretch, they sit, they balance their muscles and so on, and get a little toning up for the day as something that's good for their physical well-being, but not something that's going to help them focus their mind and think better about Krishna. So these are some thoughts, and we discussed this a little more in detail on the Hungarian version of this talk about the role of yoga in Krishna consciousness without us becoming yoga mishra bhaktis and becoming distracted from the path of pure devotion by the opulence of some mystic powers or cities that can, in theory, be attained. At least the material counterpart of those cities be attained by hatha yogis, ashtanga yogis, as Krishna explains towards the end of Srimad Bhagavatam.